Good morning. It's Wednesday, December 28th, and this is the KBOO Morning News. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on this program, New York transit workers have approved a tentative contract. Thousands of Iraqis demonstrated in Baghdad, rejecting the December 15th election results. And the Bush administration used the National Security Administration to spy on members of the United Nations Security Council during the buildup to their war in Iraq. Weather for today calls for rain and lots of it, with temperatures in the low 50s. Time is 7:01.
The Oregon minimum wage will increase 25 cents more per hour beginning New Year's Day, according to the Salem Statesman Journal. The state's minimum wage will rise from $7.25 per hour to $7.50, a 3.4% increase to match inflation. Oregon then will have the second highest wage in the nation, according to the Oregon Employment Department. Washington's $7.63 minimum wage will be the highest. The federal minimum wage remains $5.15 per hour. Oregon's minimum wage has been recalculated each year after voters passed ballot measure 25 in 2002. If the U.S. Consumer Price Index rises, so does Oregon's wage. The Oregon Center for Public Policy says Oregon's higher minimum wage is good for the state. Some industries that commonly complain about the wage are seeing strong growth.
An Oregon man stationed overseas may become a real toy soldier in the U.S. Army's next video game, KBOO's Ross Englund reports.
Sergeant First Class Jerry Wolford from Oakland, Oregon, will be a model for a new line of video figures based on the sequel to the U.S. Army's video called America's Army. A couple of years ago, the U.S. Army released the video as a recruiting tool, but within the last 2 years, the Army has been using the computer game for combat training as well as recruiting. America's Army Online video now has 6 million registered users. The Army believes that combat vets like Sergeant Wolford can assist in recruiting and training new soldiers. As of today, an estimated 100,000-plus Iraqis have died since the U.S. invasion. And according to the Department of Defense, over 2,100 Americans have died, including 35 from Oregon. For KBOO News, this is Ross Egan.
The Army's National Guard has come up with a way to address its recruiting dilemma. The Guard is offering pizza, NASCAR, and free MP3 downloads and video games, plus some cash incentives. This is being used to reach those who the Guard thinks are most likely to join and is helping reverse a steep decline in the ranks. This from the Philadelphia Inquirer. The pizza box has a picture of a young woman with a written message that says, "If you join the Guard, the government will pay you and help cover tuition." Since October, the boxes have shown up in mom-and-pop pizza places in 700 to 900 college towns nationwide. The Guard spends about 25 cents a box for the ad. A pizzeria owner, we get the boxes free. Also, there are free iTunes downloads for those who view certain Guard material on the Guard's website and fill out their personal information. The Guard's advertising budget for new recruits, which was $38 million in 2001, is now $76 million, and the number of full-time recruiters was increased from 2,700 last year to 5,100 this year. The Guard also has a NASCAR team that's a constant advertisement, and about 68% of Guard members are race fans. Military recruiting expert and professor emeritus at Northwestern University, Charles Moskos, says that military recruiters in the United States acknowledge that getting first daughter Jenna Bush to join would be a far bigger boost than even doubling the recruiting budget again. Moskos says unless you get privileged youth to serve, you'll have recruitment difficulties. This is trying to convince working-class youth they otherwise have a worthless existence.
A tentative contract for transit workers reached after a three-day strike stopped the city's buses and subways is heading to union members for a final approval. The executive board of the Transport Workers Union approved the tentative deal 37-4 last night, clearing the way for the union's 33,700 members to cast their votes. The deal requires workers to contribute to their health care plans and preserve their pensions. Pay would increase by 10.9% over 3 years. The union's general membership will vote on the contract using mail-in ballots distributed this week.
Radio frequency identification tags, RFID for short, are providing a cheap, easy way to keep products on the shelves, consumers happy, and companies making money. But to many privacy rights advocates, RFID tags could be the forerunner to nightmare scenarios in which RFID technology is the Trojan horse that brings Big Brother into your home, snooping through your medicine cabinet, fridge, and underwear drawer to find out what you do, buy, and believe, and ultimately, what you are. This small tag has so far largely flown under the radar of consumers and the mainstream press. Now the federal government plans to put RFID tags in passports, prescription medications, and perhaps driver's licenses and postage stamps. While active, RFID tags send out radio signals. The more typical passive tags lie dormant until picked up by devices called readers, which can be positioned anywhere from a couple of inches to several feet away. The reader transmits the information to a database where it can be stored. There's some debate over actual versus intended read range. RFID readers can be placed in strategic locations such as freeway on-ramps, grocery store aisles, and floors or doorways of homes. While some chips are smaller than a grain of sand, the ones currently in use on shipping crates are the size of a credit card. In the future, walk tall and carry a big industrial strength magnet.
George Bush and other top officials in his administration used the National Security Agency, NSA, to secretly wiretap the home and office telephones and monitor private email accounts of members of the United Nations Security Council in early 2003. NSA documents show they did this to determine how foreign delegates would vote on a UN resolution that paved the way for the U.S.-led war in Iraq. This from the Raw story. Two former NSA officials, familiar with the agency's campaign to spy on UN members, say the National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice authorized the plan at the request of President Bush. Bush wanted to know how delegates were going to vote. Rice did not immediately return a call for comment. The former official said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld also participated in the discussions about the plan, which involved stepping up efforts to eavesdrop on diplomats. Disclosure of the wiretaps and the monitoring of UN members' email came on the eve of the Iraq War in the British-based Observer. The leak came amid a U.S. push urging UN members to vote in favor of a resolution that said Iraq was in violation of UN resolution asserting that it had failed to rid the country of weapons of mass destruction. News of the NSA spying on the UN received little coverage in the U.S. papers at the time, but with the domestic spying report published in the New York Times last week, a closer examination of pre-war spying may reveal whether the Bush administration has used the NSA for its own political purposes.
The CIA's independent watchdog is investigating fewer than 10 cases where terror suspects may have been mistakenly swept away to foreign countries by the spy agency. This figure is lower than published reports, but enough to raise some concerns. After 9/11, President Bush gave the CIA authority to conduct the now controversial operations called renditions and permitted the agency to act without case-by-case approval from the White House or other administration offices. The highly classified practice involves grabbing terror suspects off the street of one country and flying them to their home country or another where they are wanted for a crime or questioning. Some 100 to 150 people have been snatched up since 9/11. Government officials say the action is reserved for those considered by the CIA to be the most serious terror suspects. Bush has said that these transfers to other countries, with assurances the terror suspects won't be tortured, are a way to protect the United States and its allies from attack. But some operations are being questioned. The CIA's Inspector General, John Helgeson, is looking into fewer than 10 cases of potentially erroneous renditions, according to a current intelligence official. For instance, someone may be grabbed wrongly, or after further investigation, may not be as directly linked to terrorism as initially believed. Human rights groups consider the practice of rendition a runaround to avoid the judicial processes that the United States has long championed. Experts with those groups and congressional committees familiar with intelligence programs say errors should be extremely rare because one vivid anecdote can do significant damage, but this has not been the case.
A prominent U.S. Islamic group demanded information from the government on who is being targeted in the domestic spy ring being conducted by U.S. intelligence agencies. The move comes after it was revealed last week that the government was secretly conducting radiation tests on mosques throughout the United States. Mitch Jeserich has more from Washington.
The Council for American Islamic Relations announced a Freedom of Information Act request with the Departments of Justice and Energy for information about a secret radiation testing program that has been conducted without a warrant, reportedly on sites associated with Muslims. It also sent a FOIA request seeking information on who the National Security Agency is secretly spying on.
We would kindly request the government to stop their fishing expeditions and then actually, try and base some of their investigations and their intelligence on actual criminal activity and actual probable cause.
Arslan Iftikhar is the National Legal Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Now, the American Muslim community is, presumed guilty until innocent and presumed suspect solely because of the fact, that they're Muslim. And, we hope that instead of, perpetuating stereotypes and living in an atmosphere of fear, that we will, treat everyone equally under the law.
On Friday, the FBI confirmed that it has been conducting radiation testing, though it did not indicate where. U.S. News and World Report first reported that the FBI has targeted mostly Muslim sites, including mosques, homes, and businesses. In 2001, the Supreme Court ruled that law enforcement must get warrants before using devices that can search through walls for criminal activity. But the Justice Department claims that the case does not apply to air monitoring surveillance programs when conducted in public areas. The DOJ also says it's concerned with what it calls a growing body of evidence that Al-Qaeda is seeking to use weapons of mass destruction.
Government has admitted that it's been spying on its own people, on Quakers who are avowed pacifists, even grandmothers, some of whom have done nothing more threatening than join a peace rally or attend a meeting. It's absurd.
Janice Fields with the Quaker group American Friends Services Committee speaks of a case in Denver in which a FOIA request revealed that anti-war protesters were being spied upon.
The concern of ours is, do we really want to go back to those days of COINTELPRO when peaceful groups were spied upon? Peaceful radicals like Martin Luther King Jr. Was spied upon. I mean, we, fought this in the 70s, and here we are, deja vu, back in 2005, looking back to rolling back the clock and going back to those days. And we're very concerned about that.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jeserich in Washington.
3 years after a 2002 presidential directive demanding an end to trafficking in humans for forced labor and prostitution by U.S. contractors, the Pentagon is still to actually bar the practice. This according to the Chicago Tribune. Congress approved a similar ban 1 year later, which was reauthorized by the Senate just last week. The President and Congress have demanded that government agencies include anti-trafficking provisions in all overseas company contracts and also to extend the ban to subcontractors. 5 lobbying groups, including representatives of Halliburton subsidiary KBR and DynCorp, are stalling Pentagon action. These companies are specifically targeting provisions requiring companies to monitor their overseas contractors for violations. Both KBR and DynCorp have been linked to human trafficking cases in the past. The original Bush order came on the heels of revelations that DynCorp employees had purchased women and girls as sex slaves during the 1990s U.S. military presence in Bosnia. The company responded by firing 8 employees over the incidents, as well as involvement in illegal arms sales.
The Homeland Security Department has failed to fulfill 33 of its own pledges to better protect the nation, according to a report released yesterday by House Democrats. The report concludes that gaps remain in federal efforts to secure an array of areas, including ports, borders, and chemical plants, Also, there are still delays in the department's sharing terror alerts and other intelligence with state and local officials, the review said. Compiled by 13 Democrats on the House Homeland Security Committee, the report analyzes public statements and congressional testimony on Bush administration security goals since 2002. Homeland Security spokesman Russ Knock said the department is prioritizing resources and programs based on today's greatest threats. According to the Democrats, since the department began operating in March 2003, it has failed to compile a single comprehensive list prioritizing protections for the nation's most critical and potential vulnerable buildings, transportation systems, and other infrastructure, install monitors at borders and every international seaport and airport to screen for radiation material entering the country, install surveillance cameras at all high-risk chemical plants, create one effective network to share quickly security-related intelligence and alerts with state, local, and private industry officials, and much more.
In Baghdad yesterday, thousands of Iraqis demonstrated rejecting the results in the December 15th parliamentary elections, while politicians started power-sharing talks between Shia, Kurdish, and Sunni Arab leaders. This from the Financial Times. An estimated 5,000 to 10,000 demonstrators representing Sunni Arab and secular groups claim the massive lead taken by the Shia Islamists in the election stemmed from fraud and voter intimidation. They demanded elections be rerun, but also called for the formation of a national unity government, a move leaders of the Shia-led United Iraqi Alliance, as well as Kurdish figures have already said is likely. Iraq's Independent Elections Commission is evaluating complaints about the elections, including 36 serious allegations that could affect the distribution of seats before releasing final election results. Iraqi oil officials quoted yesterday said the Deputy Prime Minister, Ahmed Jalabi, would take over the oil ministry, replacing Ibrahim Bahir al-Ulam, who has taken a month's leave.
An inmate in a Baghdad prison grabbed an assault rifle from a guard and opened fire on other guards and prisoners today. There are slightly differing accounts of the event. Iraqi officials say 8 people were killed when an inmate in a Baghdad prison grabbed an assault rifle from an Iraqi guard and opened fire indiscriminately, killing 4 guards and 4 inmates. The U.S. military said it happened when 16 prisoners tried to break out after first storming the armory and obtaining an undetermined number of weapons. The American account also says a U.S. soldier and 5 prisoners were injured. The prison was a Justice Ministry facility that also housed foreigners, the officials said.
In Baghdad, the Bush administration suggested yesterday that prisons in Iraq, where hundreds of detainees apparently were abused, were only nominally under the control of the central government in Baghdad. The State Department is suggesting that while the central government, with U.S. help, is trying to take charge of these prisons, the Interior Ministry, which runs them, may have its own way of doing things. A State Department spokesman said, "The problem has clearly not been solved and the problem is widespread. We and the Iraqi government continue to have concern about the way prisoners are treated in Iraqi facilities and in facilities nominally under control of the Iraqi government." The statement acknowledged weakness in the Iraqi government, but also credited it with trying to address a problem that undercuts the administration's case that reform is taking hold since the toppling of President Saddam Hussein. U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad said earlier this month that at least 120 abused prisoners were found in 2 detention facilities run by the Shiite-led Interior Ministry. Even before then, Sunni Arabs had complained about abuse and torture by Interior Ministry security forces. The U.S. military said Sunday it would not hand over detention facilities or individual detainees to Iraqi officials until they have demonstrated higher standards of care.
Iraqi political leaders will meet the Iraqi President Jalal Talabani in his Kurdish homeland over the next few days to prepare the ground for the formation of a new government, according to The Guardian. The announcement is part of efforts to ease sectarian, ethnic, and political friction following this month's election. It comes as between 5,000 and 10,000 supporters of former Prime Minister Iyad Alawi's secular party and 2 prominent Sunni Arab parties marched through Baghdad to protest against the results. Final results are not out yet, but preliminary figures give a big lead to the religious Shia alliance. Sunni and secular parties are insisting the vote should be rerun, at least in some key provinces, where they say results were fixed to favor the powerful United Iraqi Alliance. Police in Baghdad found three corpses bearing marks of torture and bullet wounds, while in the Sunni Arab town of Samarra, 60 miles north of the capital, gunmen abducted the head of pharmaceuticals factories and six of his bodyguards. Attacks on security forces across Iraq left six police officers and two bystanders dead.
Iraq will see the bulk of its $120 billion debt written off by the end of 2006. Finance Minister Ali Alawi told the BBC debt levels would then fall to a supportable level of $30 billion. Creditors from the Paris Club of Rich Nations have agreed to cancel most of the $40 billion owed to them after Iraq made strides to ensure economic stability. Iraq reached agreement with the International Monetary Fund this month on support for its medium-term reconstruction. This is a key step in reducing its debt burden. The Paris Club of Nations, which include the United States, United Kingdom, and Russia, had made its pledge to write off Iraq's debts conditional on an IMF agreement. The IMF praised Iraq for its success in promoting economic stability, particularly in stabilizing exchange rates. Iraq has also reached agreement with private creditors and other countries such as China, which will eliminate about 80% of its debt by the end of next year.
Israeli jets bombed the Palestinian militant group's base a few miles outside the Lebanese capital Beirut today. The Israeli army claimed the attack was a response to rockets fired from Lebanon hit a northern Israeli border town. In their deepest strike into Lebanon in 18 months, the Israeli planes attacked a base of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command, PFLPGC, a small Syrian-backed group that has been fighting the Jewish state for decades. Two guerrillas were lightly wounded, the group said. Later, Israeli warplanes flew low over southern Lebanon and the western Bekaa Valley in apparent reconnaissance flights that drew anti-aircraft fire from the Lebanese army. Witnesses said warplanes roared over the PFLPGC guerrilla base at Na'ameh, a hilltop base overlooking the Mediterranean 5 miles south of Beirut. They heard two bombs. The Israeli army said the attack was in response to rockets fired at the northern Israeli town of Kiryat Shmona on Tuesday night. It said it views such attacks with extreme severity and holds Lebanon responsible. There were no reports of injuries from three rockets that hit Kiryat Shmona, but some property was damaged. The PFLPGC commander in Lebanon denied the group was responsible. The top general for northern Israel, Major General Uday Adam, vowed to retaliate against future attacks from Lebanon and did not rule out targeting installations in Syria.
Several oil pipeline fires have broken out in Nigeria's Niger Delta region. This comes barely a week after the region recorded three other oil pipeline fires which left some villages in ruins. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
The latest fire incident is on a pipeline that conveys petroleum products from a Niger Delta refinery to northern Nigeria. An official of the state-owned oil company says there are fires at several points along the pipeline. The cause of the fire is still unknown, but similar oil pipeline fires last week were blamed on militant youths. In one instance, a pipeline belonging to the Anglo-Dutch oil company Shell Petroleum was attacked with dynamite. A previously unknown militia group calling itself the Metals Brigade claimed responsibility for the attack. The attack forced Nigeria to cut its oil export by 7%. This slightly increased global oil prices. Nigeria is the world's sixth largest oil exporter. All of Nigeria's oil comes from the Niger Delta region, but the people rank among the poorest in the world. Billions of dollars in yearly profits from oil sales are mainly shared between the Nigerian government and Western oil companies. Local youths are increasingly resorting to violence to draw attention to their plight. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
The oil multinational Shell is facing contempt of court proceedings in Nigeria over gas flaring. This from the BBC. Last month, a court ordered the company to stop flaring gas from oil wells in the country. Shell has not halted the practice, so campaign groups have initiated proceedings for contempt of court, which can result in imprisonment. Shell has appealed against the initial judgment and denies it is in contempt. In November, the Nigerian federal court sitting in Benin City ruled on a case brought by environmental and social groups on behalf of the Iwerekan community of Delta State. They argued that flaring creates significant local pollution and health problems and is inherently wasteful of a resource which could bring income to local communities. International environmental groups also argue it is a significant source of greenhouse gas emissions, with flaring in Nigeria perhaps the biggest source of emissions in Africa. The Benin court ruled that gas flaring amounts to a gross violation of the plaintiff's fundamental right to human life and dignity, and that Shell and the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation had broken national law by failing to carry out an environmental impact assessment.
In Chile, center-left candidate Michelle Bachelet has taken a lead in the race to become president. Bachelet will face a strong right-wing challenge in the January 15th runoff. She has won nearly 46% of the vote in the initial round this week. Sebastian Piñera will be her rival in the runoff after third-placed Joaquin Lavín threw his support behind him. The government coalition also posted solid gains in Congress. This is the first time the Concertación Bloc has won a majority in the Senate since it came to power in 1990, following the end of General Augusto Pinochet's military rule. The two presidential candidates from the right fought a close contest on Sunday. Millionaire businessman Piñera had 25.4% of the vote, and former Santiago Mayor Lavín 23.2%. After admitting defeat, Lavín announced on television he was going to express his total support for Piñera. Opinion polls have suggested Bachelet would win a runoff against any other candidate. If so, she's expected to follow many of the policies of President Ricardo Lagos' free market economics mixed with leftist social programs. This according to the BBC.
China's government demanded today that the United States lift sanctions imposed on six Chinese companies accused of supplying Iran with missile technology or chemical arms material. The Chinese firms are barred from receiving U.S. import licenses and from doing business with the American government under penalties announced yesterday by the U.S. State Department. Washington has repeatedly sanctioned Chinese companies accused of providing missile and other weapons technology to Iran, Pakistan, and other governments in violation of international weapons controls. Beijing isn't a member of the multinational treaty that limits trade in long-range missile technology, but has promised to abide by its restrictions. It has denied in the past that its companies engage in weapons proliferation. In making the announcement, State Department spokesman Adam Arely said the sanctions were based on credible evidence, which he did not disclose.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, December 28, 2005. Weather for today calls for rain and lots of it, with temperatures in the low 50s. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Our assistant producer is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Liam Delta. The KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 7:30, we have Barbara Bernstein hosting Locus Focus Talk Radio. At 9, it's Movie Talk with Ed, DK, and Dawn. At 9:30, Laurie Sonnenfeld hosts Speaking of Animals. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller examines recent changes in the legal meaning of organic as it relates to food production, and then speaks with people working to incorporate practices that promote conservation of biodiversity into organic farming and ranching. Finally, then, at 11 o'clock, it's going to be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Don't forget, stay tuned to KABU at 5 p.m. this evening for the KABU Evening News. We're going to have Colorado journalist Alan Best offers a background on the so-called eco-terrorism crimes linked to local activists now jailed awaiting trial. And local attorney Paul Loney gives the history of federal surveillance of Portland activists. Plus, what should you do if you believe spooks are on your trail? It's all live tonight on the KBOO Evening News. Plus, at 6 p.m., here's Circle A Radio. Thanks for joining us this morning.